2 days later, as he was about to step inside the saloon, Blackie caught movement in the corner of his eye and stopped to peer off toward the creek at two riders. Staring hard at the visitors, he began to think that one of them looked familiar. As the riders drew closer, he realized who it was. It had been some time since he had seen him, but there was only one man he knew who rode so nonchalantly in the saddle. He turned to meet him, his feet spread wide, hands on hips, a smug grin on his face.
By God, I thought you was dead!
Howdy, Blackie. I thought one of your customers would have cut your throat by now.
Both riders were carefully checking for signs of anyone else around.
Well, there ain't nobody here. I reckon you're looking for somebody.
He had an idea who that somebody might be, thinking of Garcia again. He hoped to hell that Buck would catch Blanton. Pulling the horses up in front of the saloon, Buck and Casey dismounted.
Blackie, say hello to Casey Dixon. Casey, meet a by-God miracle.
Both men looked at him for explanation.
It's a damn miracle he ain't in jail.
I do, Casey.
Blackie smiled wide enough to expose the chew of tobacco clamped in his back teeth. He turned back to Buck.
Them's mighty harsh words to use on an honest merchant. I thought we was friends. I swear, Buck, there's a hell of a lot of gray in them whiskers. You sure you ain't too old to be running all over this territory? Ain't it about time they put you out to pasture?
I reckon there's a few more winters in this old hide yet. We're looking for Roy Blanton. I'm thinking he must have come this way.
The comment turned Blackie's smile off, and he paused before responding. One rule he had always lived by ever since opening his business at the crossing was to give no information to lawmen regarding the comings and goings of his customers. This time, however, it was different. Blanton had it coming.
He was here. Him and three of his boys.
How long ago?
He left here 2 nights ago.
Did he say where he was headed?
Nope, and I didn't ask him.
Did you see which way he headed when he left here?
Yeah, I watched him leave. He started out to the north, following Boggy Creek.
Blackie looked the young marshal in the eye when he answered him. As good as any at judging a man's attitude, Buck found it interesting that Blackie answered every question quickly and forthrightly, as if trying to help the deputies, a practice that was not common to men of his stripe.
I got a feeling you ain't partial to old Roy. Did that old son of a bitch cheat you out of some money or something?
One of those crazy sons of his shot my store clerk. You remember Juan Garcia? He was a better man than all them Blantons put together.
Sorry to hear about that. He was a good
one. Yeah, well, water under the bridge. You fellas gonna stay for a while? I'll have May fix you some supper.
Buck cocked an eye in Casey's direction. It was plain to see that the sound of a cooked meal appealed to him. But there was still an hour or two of daylight left.
Probably be easier to pick up their trail in the morning.
Yeah, good idea, partner. We'll be out of here early in the morning, Blackie.
Buck looked back to Casey.
It's bad for Blackie's business for a couple of lawmen to hang around too long.
Buck's right. It could ruin my business if word got out that I associated with the likes of you two. But I reckon it won't hurt for just one night. There ain't nobody hiding out in the bushes waiting for you to leave.
The evening passed quietly, somewhat of a rare occasion when Buck and Whiskey were in close proximity, as Casey had discovered in their brief partnership. Blackie's Choctaw wife cooked supper for him, and they had a few drinks while Buck and Blackie talked about earlier times in the nation. They retired to their bedrolls at a reasonable hour, with Buck still relatively sober. Casey lay by a campfire built on the ashes of one used by Roy Blanton and his sons 2 nights before. Lying on his back, looking up at the pinpoints of starlight in a moonless sky, he thought about Charity McDonald. Why? He couldn't say. May fixed breakfast for him in the morning, rising to start her kitchen fire before they rolled out of their blankets. Blackie refused to take their money for the breakfast, saying they had paid for everything the night before. They thanked him for his hospitality and took their leave of the crossing. The tracks of four horses leading off to the northeast confirmed the direction Blackie had indicated when asked which way Blanton was headed.
I never know Blackie to be so free with information about one of his customers. He's wanting us to catch up with old Roy.
The trail held to the northeast, generally heading toward the Kiamishi Mountains, causing both lawmen to wonder about Blanton's destination. When they struck the Kiamishi River, the tracks followed the river, still in a direction leading northeast.
I can't figure out where the hell they're going. There ain't nothing I know about this way but a few scattered farms.
Looks to me like they're bound to break off one way or the other. If they're thinking about hightailing it back to Texas like you figure, it don't make a lot of sense to keep going in this direction. They ought to be cutting away from the river pretty soon and headed back south. If they're not thinking about striking out for Texas, then my guess is they're planning to hit McAllister. If that's what's on their minds, then they'll most likely follow the river farther up and head out to the northwest.
I reckon we'll just find out, won't we?
They continued to ride along the river through the hill country, following tracks that told them Blanton had no idea that he was being followed until coming upon a campsite. Roy and his sons had stopped there on the bank of the river overnight. From there, the trail left the river and started out to the northwest, a direction that would lead to McAllister.
Looks like we're coming full circle, back to McAllister. If we'd known Roy was cutting back to McAllister, we could have waited right there for him. Instead of chasing all over these hills, for all the good we'd done in Etowka, it wouldn't have made much of a difference.
They hit the bank in Etowka. I reckon they're thinking on robbing the new bank in McAllister.
I expect so. What about the Choctaw Light Horse? Are there any stationed there, you know?
There were, but not anymore.
And that bank's sitting there, just plump and waiting.
Well, look at this.
Roy Blanton and his sons rode into town just as the dying rays of the sun settled down for the evening.
First time I rode through here, there wasn't much more than J.J. McAllister's general store. Now look at it. Stores, and a bank, and a hotel and saloon for folks like us that has a lot of money. We'll get the horses took care of first. Then we'll get ourselves a room in the hotel, and you boys can buy you some supper and wet your whistles if you want. I'm gonna take a little walk around before it gets hard dark, see what that bank looks like.
Once the horses were stabled and fed, the Blantons walked up the street to the hotel, each with saddlebags over one shoulder and a rifle in the opposite hand. Already feeling as if he owned the town, Roy threw the door open wide and strode up to the desk to confront Wilbur Morris, the clerk.
We're gonna need two rooms for the night.
Already staring wide-eyed the moment the door was flung open, Wilbur blinked a couple of times while he looked the four strangers over. Men who looked as rough as these did not, as a rule, rent rooms in their hotel. They usually slept with their horses. He responded as he had been trained, however.
Yes, Mr.
Jordan.
Yes, Mr. Jordan. We have a couple of rooms near the kitchen I can let you and your party have for $2 per person per night. That would be in advance, of course.
A slow grin began to spread across Blanton's rough features, and he cast a cold eye on the face of the clerk.
Maybe you didn't hear me good, sonny. I want two rooms upstairs, the best you got.
He pulled a roll of bills from his vest pocket and counted out $50.
I'll be wanting some other things, too. So when this runs out, you let me know.
Yes, Mr. Jordan.
Wilbur spun the guest register around for Roy to sign. Roy spun it back.
You just write John Jordan and Company on it and give me the keys.
He turned to wink at his boys, who were all grinning broadly.
Yes, sir.
Wilbur filled in the name. He turned and pulled two keys from a keyboard with no keys missing.
Rooms 20 and 21. They're facing the front of the hotel, so you can see everything in the street from your window.
I want me one of them bathtubs.
I'll have someone bring one up to your room.
With plenty of hot water.
Roy glanced at Junior, whose expression was questioning his father's sanity.
I got a hankering for one of them tub baths. You want one?
I reckon not.
Junior glanced at his brothers, who both backed away before the invitation was extended to them. Roy looked back at the clerk.
I think I'll take a little walk right now, as soon as I put my stuff in the room. Have him heat me up some water in about an hour.
What the hell's gotten into him?
I don't know.
I think it's got something to do with getting old. Folks do funny things when they start getting old. Their mind goes on them.
It had never really occurred to Junior before that his pa would ever show signs of aging. As he thought about it now, he really had no idea how old Roy was. In fact, he wasn't real sure how old he was, but he was confident he was either 27 or 28. Didn't matter which, but he had to surmise that his pa was getting close to 60, if he hadn't already reached it. He decided he'd better keep an eye on the old man in case he started doing other crazy things. Roy stopped by the saloon on his way back and found his sons well into a bottle of whiskey. They were seated at a table in the middle of the room. There were not many patrons in the saloon, probably because the evening was young. What few were drinking an early supper had situated themselves at the outermost tables, giving the three young ruffians plenty of space.
Sit down, Pa. We got an extra glass for you. Better jump in while there's still something in the bottle.
Roy pulled up a chair and joined his sons. Buster poured him a drink.
Did you eat anything before you started filling your gut with this poison?
No, sir. We just thought we'd have a little drink before we ate. We were just fixing to go back to the hotel when you came in.
Drink too much of that stuff on an empty stomach and you'd be sicker than dogs all night. Not worth a cuss to me tomorrow. One more, and then we'll go get some supper. We got work to do tomorrow.
Uh-oh, Pa.
Junior and Roy turned as one to look toward the door and the Indian policeman who had just walked in.
Now just hold still. Don't do nothing unless I shoot first. Just go right on with your drinking.
While they watched, the policeman walked over to the bar and talked quietly to the bartender, occasionally glancing around the room, but focusing mainly on the four strangers at the middle table. After a few minutes, he ambled over to the table. He stopped behind Zeke's chair.
Evening. You fellows are new in town.
That's right. Probably won't be around your little town more than 2 or 3 days. You the sheriff here?
No. There's no sheriff here now. I was sent down here from Tuskahoma.
You're kind of out of your territory down here, ain't you?
We go where we're needed. The bank in Otaka was robbed a few days ago by a man named Blanton, and he killed one of our policemen. He had 3 sons with him. Are these men your sons?
These three? Nah, they ain't my sons. I ain't got no sons. Daughters either. My name's Jordan. These fellas and me work together. We just came down from Oklahoma City. We're in the coal mining business. Heard there was talk of new coal deposits around here. How about it, boys? We must look like a bunch of outlaws.
Outlaws.
People around here are pretty nervous about any strangers right now. We don't want the same thing to happen here that happened in Otaka. I have to question any strangers.
Oh, sure you do. I don't blame you or the other folks around here.
Enjoy your evening.
Damn, Pa. You had me believing you was a coal miner.
Maybe he bought that story and maybe he didn't. But I hope the bastard shows up tomorrow. I'll make another payment on Billy's grave.
Roy stood up.
Let's go get some food in us. Then I got a little plan up my sleeve for this town.
John Redwing walked across the dusty street to the dry goods store where Floyd Ramsey was just in the process of closing for the day. Recognizing the Choctaw policeman, Floyd put his broom aside and came to meet him.
I was getting ready to close up. Is there something you need?
No, sir. I don't need to buy anything. Do Do you keep a weapon here in the store?
I got a rifle in the back room. Why?
You might want to keep it handy tomorrow. I'm not sure, but I think the Blanton gang, the ones that held up the bank in Otaka, might be planning to rob the bank here tomorrow.
Jesus. How do you know that?
Like I said, I'm not sure. But there's four strangers in town that don't look right to me. And they fit the description of Roy Blanton and his three sons.
What do you expect me to do about it?
Nothing. Unless it actually happens. But if it does, and they do get away, I want everybody to be ready for them. I'll talk to the other business owners, either tonight or when they open in the morning. And we can make it hot for anybody riding down the street.
Oh, damn. I hope you're wrong about those fellas. But I'll do my part if they come riding this way.
Good. If everybody helps, maybe we can stop the Blantons from robbing this town.
Damn right. We need to teach all that wild scum that think there's no law in the nations that we'll stand up to them. Hey, why don't you just go ahead and arrest them tonight if you're sure they're the Blanton gang?
Because I'm not sure. The older man says his name is Jordan and the others are not his sons. He may be looking to start a new business in McAllister, like he says. I just think it pays to be cautious. If they are outlaws and they come charging down this street, you'll know they got by me. It'll be up to you and the others to stop them.
John Redwing duplicated his visit to the dry goods store with any other merchants he found still open that night. The others were told early the following morning. By mid-morning, the whole town was alert to the possibility of an attempt to rob the bank. As a rule, the bank opened later in the morning, so when Fred Barnett arrived to unlock the door, he was surprised to find a stranger sitting inside the small entrance waiting for him.
I'm afraid you'll have to wait until the bank opens in about half an hour.
Stranger got to his feet and showed his badge.
I'm part of the Choctaw Light Horse.
He explained why he was there and told Barnett of his suspicions of the four strangers who had arrived in town the day before.
Oh, hell. I heard about that bank robbery in Atoka. Two men killed Mother of God. What are you going to do?
Can't do nothing until they make a move. Shoot, maybe they ain't even in on it.
Well, I'll just close for the day. I've got a new safe and nobody knows the combination but me. I'll just close up and go home.
I don't know about that. Some of these outlaws are using dynamite on these safes and getting them open anyway. How much you got in that safe right now? Very much?
Hell yes, over $6,000. Most of it railroad money.
All right. Take all but a little bit of change for the tellers out of the safe and hide it somewhere. Then if the robbery does happen, don't put up no fuss. Tell them there ain't no money. Open the safe for them so they can see for themselves. When they see there ain't nothing to steal, they'll just hightail it out of town. That way nobody gets shot, no money gets stole.
I don't like to have that much money hid someplace unprotected.
It won't be for that long. I'll guard it for you if you're afraid somebody might find it.
A timid man by nature and already feeling his breakfast churning in his stomach, Fred Barnett was faced with his worst nightmare. As he stood fretting over the decision he had to make, his teller came in the front door. Surprised to find Barnett standing with a stranger near the door where the safe was located, he paused. Barnett quickly told him the man was a Choctaw policeman.
Stanley, go on and get ready to open.
Barnett turned back to the policeman.
Where are you going to be if they come in?
I'll be right outside waiting for them.
What if they get mad when they find no money in the safe? They might kill me.
They're after the money. They'd be more apt to shoot you if you wouldn't open the safe. Besides, like I said, I'll be outside waiting for them.
All right. Well, we'd better hurry. Wait here.
Barnett went into the next room and began dialing the combination on the massive safe. As soon as it was open, he hurriedly stuffed bundles of currency into two large canvas bags. When he was done, he walked back out into the main room.
I'll put them in the back room in the supply closet.
Here, let me give you a hand.
The policeman took one of the bags and they both took him to the back of the building.
Unlock this door.
Why?
So I can go out that way.
We don't ever unlock that door.
Well, we're gonna unlock it today.
The policeman pulled his pistol and aimed it at Barnett's stomach. The banker's eyes opened wide, astonished by the lawman's sudden impatience. Still confused, he nevertheless did as he was told. As soon as the key turned in the lock, the door was pushed open from the outside and Roy Blanton stormed into the room, followed by Zeke. Buster remained outside, holding the horses.
Morning, Junior. Is this all of it?
All but a little change locked up in that big old safe in there. There's another feller up front. Go get him, Zeke.
Roy leaned out through the open door.
Buster, throw some rope in here.
With his head back inside, he looked to Junior again.
You've done a hell of a good job, son. Saved us a lot of hassle.
Thanks, Pa.
Junior took the badge from his vest and threw it on the floor.
Don't reckon I'll be needing that anymore.
When Zeke herded a frightened teller to the back, he and Junior tied the two bankers up and left them in the back room. When they had loaded the two sacks of money on their horses, they departed the town, riding behind the buildings, since Roy had noticed that there seemed to be a rifle propped close to the front door of every damn store on the street. Once clear of the town, they swung back to the southeast on the same trail that brought them to McAllister. Loping along at an easy pace, Casey decided it had been money well spent to let Horace Ramsey back in Ataka change the angle on the gray's rear hooves. It was a lot smoother ride without the annoying habit the horse had of breaking into a trot for no apparent reason. Still following a trail left by the Blantons through a land of tree-covered hills, he figured they could be no farther than a day's ride from McAllister now. The sun was rapidly sinking behind them, and Buck had already suggested that they make camp at the first likely spot. With Buck behind him, leading the pack horse, he guided the gray toward a narrow notch in the hills ahead, then suddenly pulled back on the reins.
You smell that?
Yep, smoke, yonder way.
Buck pointed toward a wooded hill on their left.
On the other side of that hill. Either a campfire or a house.
I don't reckon we could be lucky enough for it to be the Blantons, but we can damn sure find out.
Could be. We need to be careful about this, though. It maybe be best if we split up, come in from both sides. One of us can ride out through that notch, and the other one go around and climb up on top, so we could have a rifle above the camp. And the trouble is, it looks pretty steep on the backside of that hill. Might be a tough climb. Might have to leave your horse and climb up on foot.
Yeah, I can go climb up on top.
I was hoping you'd say that. You're a hell of a lot younger than me. Might take me half a night to climb that hill.
Let's go then.
Hold your horses. I know you're young and strong, but don't be in too much of a hurry to get up there. Give me time to get in position just in case it's who we think it is.
Casey nudged the gray forward. Halfway around the hill, he found that Buck had been right in guessing the backside to be steep.
Hell, it's almost a cliff. Might take me half the night.
He tied the gray and the pack horse to a tree branch, drew his rifle, and began the rugged climb. On the opposite side of the hill, Buck pushed his horse hard in a hurry to reach the campfire before Casey got in position on top. As he had assumed, the notch took him to the other side in short order. Within minutes, he saw the source of the smoke and four figures seated around it. There was little doubt in his mind that it was Roy Blanton and his three sons. Instead of taking cover and waiting for Casey to get into position on the hilltop above, he rode straight toward the fire. In the gathering darkness, he walked his horse slowly into the clearing, almost right on top of him.
Hello, the camp! I'm coming in!
Come on, then!
With Roy Blanton's pistol trained on their visitor, he watched the rider approach the fire and stop a few paces short.
Damn, Buck Avery. Hello, Buck.
Roy Blanton and the boys. I thought it was you. Smells your smoke.
What the hell are you doing on my tail? Wasn't that money I gave you 3 years ago enough? Hell, it was enough to set you up for life.
What the hell are you doing raiding back here in the territory? We made a deal, and I kept my end of the bargain.
Hell, that was 3 years ago. You ought to have been retired by now, you old fart. So you found us. What are you aiming to do about it, seeing as how it's your gun again, our four?
Well, that's just it, damn it. If you'd gone the hell back to Texas after you robbed that train at Durant Station, It wouldn't have caused me no problem. But now I ain't by myself. I expect in about 10 or 15 minutes there's gonna be somebody on that hill above us that ain't looking for no payoff.
His statement caused all four Blantons to react, straining to look up toward the hilltop.
Tried to stall him for a week, hoping you've had sense enough to get the hell out of this territory. But he's like a damn bloodhound.
Get ready to ride, boys.
Roy's gun still drawn. He turned back to Buck.
It pleasures me to know that you're looking out for us.
He paused to give Buck a sinister smile while his son scrambled to get their horses.
Or are you aiming to try and stop us?
Well, now, that don't sound very likely, does it? With you holding a gun on me already and there being for you. No, I don't cotton to the idea of having you get caught either. Shooting your mouth off about how much you pay me to let you jump over to Texas. I'm just telling you now, you best get out of here right now before my partner gets to the top of that hill.
Fair enough. All right, boys, let's get the hell out of here.
Junior led his horse up and handed him the reins.
There ain't but one man up there, Buck.
That's right, but he's as good as four, and he can pick you off one by one before you can say Jackrabbit. Now, damn it, Roy, get going. Get on back across the Red.
Just like old times, ain't it, Buck? Tell you what I'm gonna do.
Roy reached into his saddlebag and pulled out a bundle of paper money.
Here's a little something for the warning.
Buck hesitated for only a second before taking the money and quickly jamming it down in his saddlebag.
One more thing. Better nick me in the shoulder so I have some kind of reason I let you get away.
Why, I'd be happy to, Buck.
Roy took aim with his pistol.
Now take good aim, damn it. Just crease me. I want to go around my arm in a sling for a week or two.
The bullet struck Buck high on the shoulder. Buck dismounted and bent down to sit on the ground, holding the wounded shoulder.
Get, damn it!
The poor outlaws started out at a gallop through the notch Buck had used to approach the camp. They'd gone only a few dozen yards when Zeke pulled even with his father.
There ain't but one man back there on that hill. I'm going back and get him.
He wheeled his horse and charged back toward the camp.
Zeke!
Roy hesitated for a moment, trying to decide if he should go back, but Junior and Buster were already halfway through the notch.
Zeke'll have to take care of himself.
He kicked his horse into a gallop after Buster and Junior. Buck was astonished to see Zeke suddenly come charging back through the camp.
You damn fool, what the hell are you doing?
Casey had just gained the top of the steep hill, and he took aim with his pistol. He caught Zeke in the shoulder, and he fell from his horse. Buck struggled to his feet.
Zeke!
Zeke turned to face him, a look of surprise frozen on his face when he saw the .44 pointed at him.
Sorry. I couldn't take a chance on you shooting off your mouth.
Buck sat back down then and waited for Casey.
Buck!
Casey ran to his partner's side.
You all right?
I'm shot. I'm sorry, Casey. I guess I'm getting slow in my old age. Wasn't sure it was them, and then I let them get the jump on me. I tried to stop them, but they got away.
How bad are you hurt?
I don't know. It's paining me something awful. I don't know if I can ride or not.
Casey looked over at Zeke Blanton's corpse.
What about him?
Casey knew he had hit him with his shot.
You knocked him down all right. And I told him he was under arrest. He pulled his gun, didn't give me no choice but to shoot first. I reckon I was firing a little wild.
Well, I reckon they got away from us this time.
Casey laid his rifle aside and knelt down to determine the extent of the old deputy's wound.
We'll have to track him in the morning.
That's what I get for being so all fired in a hurry to catch him. I should have waited for you to get your rifle on before I made a move. Damn it. I'm getting too old for this business.
We'll get after him when it gets light. Can you get up?
I think I can.
Come on, I'll help you. Let's get over by the fire so I can take a look at that wound. Looks to me like your shirt's hurt more than your shoulder.
Casey looked at his partner, doing his best to hide the astonishment he felt over Buck's apparent incapacitation after nothing more than a flesh wound. Maybe he was simply suffering from the shock of having been shot at close range, or maybe he was right. Maybe he was getting too old for this. Guessing what Casey must be thinking, Buck pulled his bandana from his neck and stuffed it inside his shirt, covering his shoulder.
Hell, it ain't nothing but a scratch. I was more winded from running up that damn slope than anything else. I expect we best leave this place. Casey gets some ideas about coming back to jump us later on tonight.
Buck started kicking dirt over the fire.
We'll get on my horse and go get yours. Make camp on the other side of this hill.
Casey gave the idea a moment's consideration.
Seems to me it would be better to go get the horses than come back here. Put the horses out of sight and wait here in case they do come back. I mean, if he gives a damn about his son, he might come back to get him. Don't that make sense to you?
Well, I guess it does at that.
After fetching Casey's gray and the pack horse, they returned to Blanton's campsite. Casey led all three horses back in the trees where they wouldn't be seen by anyone approaching the camp. He and Buck split up then to take positions on two sides of the clearing. With some more Casey's jerky for supper, they lay in wait, watching for visitors. Through the long night hours, Buck's mind was laden with guilty thoughts of a decision he had made more than 3 years before, and the dread that his chickens had come home to roost. Why'd he thought that a thief and a murderer like Roy Blanton could be taken for his word? He told himself it was because times were hard. He'd been too many years as a deputy marshal, and he didn't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of. Folks would say that that wasn't enough reason to turn your back on your oath, but them folks hadn't ever tried to face the talking end of a rifle for pennies a day. He shifted his position to ease the gentle throbbing he felt in his shoulder, hoping as he scanned the clearing where the fire had been that Roy would not return for Zeke's body. He wouldn't be as worried if he could be sure they could shoot all three of them down. But the odds were too long that one or all of the Blantons might be captured and Casey would take him prisoner if at all possible. Buck couldn't afford to take that chance. As he lay there in the dark, he couldn't prevent his mind from wandering back to that day near the little river. He had dogged Roy Blanton and his four sons for 2 weeks, finally able to strike their trail a few miles east of Idabel. He'd been certain that Roy had a favorite hideout in that part of the territory, somewhere north of the Red River in the Texas border, but he had never had any success in finding it. This time, Roy and his boys led him right to it. Around 10 miles from Broken Bow, not far from where the Little River joined the Mountain Fork River, Roy had built a cabin back up in the hills. It was his retreat where he rested up between the raids he and his son conducted on banks, railroads, ranchers, and any other victims in their disregard for the law. Buck closed his eyes for a second, wincing with the thought of that day. Just like the present night, he had sneaked up on them while they were all sitting around a fire by a creek, roasting a beef they had stolen that afternoon. Before they knew he was there, he caught him with no chance to react. The Blanton gang. He had him cold, his Winchester daring any one of them to make a move. The boys were younger then. Billy, the youngest, was no more than 14 or 15. Buck remembered Roy's eyes blazing with anger to have been caught helpless like that.
You aiming to take us all back to Fort Smith?
That's the general idea.
Fort Smith's a long ride from here. You got 5 of us to watch. That ain't gonna be easy for one man to go without sleep, watching to see that nobody gets loose.
He wasn't telling Buck anything the deputy had not already been considering, if only to make his job a little bit easier. He had been wishing that one of them had tried to go for a gun so he could have reduced his number of prisoners by one or more.
Now, there's a way all of us can come out ahead. We was fixing to slip over the Red in the morning and get on back to Texas, get out of Oklahoma for good. You and the Injun police have been making it kind of hard for us here in the Nations. I got money from 3 bank jobs and 1 mail car holdup hid near here. little more than $15,000. It's worth my freedom to turn that money over to you. And you can do whatever the hell you want with it. Just let me and my boys slip over the red, and you won't see us in Injun territory no more.
Buck knew he shouldn't hesitate, but he did. Roy read the hesitation in his eyes. That much money would ensure his old age, which was not that far in coming.
What are you going to get for taking us in? The glory of catching Roy Blanton? How much does that pay? How much is that going to help you when they put you out to pasture? Not a damn cent is how much. I'm giving you a chance to look out for yourself. The damn U.S. Marshal's office sure as hell ain't going to take care of you when you get too old to do the job. You're riding on one side of the law, and I'm riding on the other, but it all comes out the same. Ain't nobody going to look out for you but you. What's it going to be? Glory or money?
I could just take you in and take the damn money, too.
Well, now, that's a thought, ain't it? There's too many things that'll keep that from happening, though. Number one, you don't know where the money's hid. Number two, you still got to worry about keeping an eye on all of us all the way to Fort Smith. Number three, if you try to shoot us, you can't kill us all before one of us will get you. Nobody wins but whoever's left holding the money. My way, everybody wins.
How do I know you won't shoot me if I let you go?
Wouldn't make no sense to shoot you. Killing the U.S. Marshal would just stir up too much fuss. Instead of having one of you lawmen after us, I'd have the whole damn bunch of you. This is just a business deal between me and you. Let us go, and you'll be sitting pretty with enough money to tide you over, and we'll clear out of Oklahoma territory. No sense in anybody getting killed or going to jail over this.
All right.
It was the first and only time he had ever betrayed his badge. There was no trust on the part of either party until the deal was completed. Roy and three of his sons had packed up and gone to retrieve the money from its hiding spot, while Buck held Billy Blanton as hostage until they returned with his share. As promised, Roy dropped a sack with $15,000 at Buck's feet. Then, with guns drawn by everyone, the Blantons withdrew cautiously until safely able to wheel their horses and depart. It had taken a while. Buck came to justify the event in his mind to the point where he considered he had it coming for all the years of service he had given to the U.S. Marshal's office. Blanton had kept his end of the bargain for 3 years, but now he was back, bringing Buck's troubles with him. 35 yards away from Buck, laying close behind the trunk of a large oak tree, Casey Dixon watched the clearing where Zeke's body lay. Casey was sorting through some serious thoughts of his own. He was still puzzled over Buck getting himself shot and the old deputy's reaction to such a minor wound. He knew for a fact that Buck had been shot several times before, enough to regard the scratch he picked up tonight as nothing at all. The apparent lack of urgency on Buck's part was another thing that Casey couldn't understand. Maybe he was partially to blame. He should have taken Buck's horse and chased after Blanton while he could see to follow him. But things just happen the way they do, he finally told himself. Buck will be all right in the morning. The only thing that didn't add up was the fact that Zeke Blanton's gun was still in his holster.
Yonder, Paw!
Buster Blanton pointed to the corpse, lying a few yards from the ashes of the fire.
It's Zeke!
God damn it, keep your voice down, they'll hear you.
It was his son's body, all right, and the sight of it twisted his guts inside him till he wanted to explode. But his sense of survival told him to hold back until he was sure of the situation.
There ain't nobody here! They're gone!
They're here. Buck Avery knows I'll come back to get my boy. I'll get Zeke, and by God, I'll have my revenge.
You want me to go get him, Pa?
No! Damn it, you stay put. You want to get yourself shot? They're still here, I told you. Now stay down till I tell you to move.
All remained quiet in the clearing as the first rays of light probed the narrow gulch between the two steep tree-covered hills. Shortly after, the misty gray of the pre-dawn minutes began to fade, and colors began their gradual return to the trees and sky. Abruptly, the sun peeked over the eastern side of the gulch and seemed to focus on the corpse near the middle of the clearing. There was going to be a battle. The hills, the trees, and the boulders knew it. And somehow, both sides knew the enemy was present, even though there had been no visual evidence to confirm it. Roy Blanton jerked his head around to cast an angry glance at Buster, who had absentmindedly cocked his rifle.
Damn you! They've given us away!
Roy immediately backed away from the boulder and signaled his two sons to do the same.
We've got to find a better place. They know we're here now.
Oh, I'm sorry, Pa.
Shut up! Follow me.
On the far side of the clearing, Casey signaled Buck and pointed in the general vicinity from which the metallic sound had come. Buck nodded and shifted over to the other side of the tree, giving him cover. Casey signaled again, trying to tell Buck that he was going to drop farther back in the trees and circle around behind. Buck nodded his understanding. Moving rapidly in an effort to get around behind Blanton, Casey darted from tree to tree, almost out of sight of the clearing. He paused to catch his breath, but right before he was about to start moving again, a rustling of leaves about 40 yards away caused him to freeze. In a few moments, a solitary figure appeared, pushing his way through a thick stand of laurel. It was one of the sons, no doubt intent upon doing the same as Casey, trying to locate the two lawmen. Casey dropped slowly to one knee, holding close to the tree trunk. Free of the laurels, the outlaw started toward a larger boulder some 20 yards in front of him.
Hold it right there! You're under arrest!
Startled, Buster stopped dead still for a few seconds, looking around him frantically, trying to locate the source of the command.
Drop your gun! You're under arrest!
Whirling toward the sound, Buster opened fire, shooting wildly in Casey's general direction with no sighting of his target. Casey remained patient, firing only when Buster had emptied his gun and decided to run. Aiming low, Casey put a bullet in Buster's leg, causing the outlaw to trip and fall. Casey quickly sprang to his feet and ran after the wounded outlaw. He caught him while he was still on his hands and knees. Casey planted a solid boot in Buster's ribs, knocking him over on his back before the unfortunate man could recover. Buster managed to raise his pistol, forgetting that he had emptied it seconds before. Casey pistol-whipped him. With Casey's .44 stuck in his face, he gave up. Now, from the other side of the clearing, Casey heard Buck's rifle telling him that his partner must have caught sight of the other two Blantons.
Get up.
I can't, you son of a bitch! You shot me in the leg!
Which one are you?
Buster!
You ain't hurt that bad. Get on your damn feet or I'm gonna shoot you in the other leg.
With Casey's gun cocked and still aimed at his head, Buster reluctantly struggled to his feet.
Drop your gun belt. Now unbuckle your belt holding your trousers. All right. I want you to back up to that small tree.
When they were both at the tree, Casey took Buster's belt, tied his hands behind his back and around the tree.
You just make yourself comfortable. I'll be back to get you in a minute.
As Casey stepped carefully through the brush underneath the trees, his cautious eyes scanned the forest before him. Up ahead, he could hear the constant exchange of rifle fire as Buck and the other two Blantons had at it. Some 10 or 15 yards short of the clearing, he stopped when he saw the branches of a large pine move just as the rifle fired. A moment later, he saw bark fly from the tree as Buck sought a lucky shot. The trunk of the pine stood between him and the outlaws, giving him no clear shot. With his rifle aimed at the tree, he waited, hoping to get a target. After a 15-minute standoff with Buck peppering the pine with rifle shot, there seemed to be no advantage for either side. Thinking it his duty, Casey made an effort to stop the shoot.
Throw down your guns, Blanton. No need for another one of you sons to get killed. We've already got Buster.
Roy rose up slightly.
You can go to hell. You ain't got no upper hand in this fight.
He leveled his rifle and fired at Buck, and in the process, he gave Casey a target. Still waiting patiently for a clear shot, Casey took it, although it wasn't much of a target. No more than Roy's left forearm was exposed when he aimed his rifle. Knowing he wasn't likely to get any more of a target, Casey squeezed off one shot that struck Roy's forearm and shattered the wrist bone. Roy dropped his rifle.
Come on out, Blanton, it's over.
Junior stared with wide open eyes at his father, bent over now, holding his shattered wrist, writhing in pain with blood already spattered in splotches of red on the ground. At first, he waited for Roy to tell him what to do, but his father was in too much pain at the moment. Then it hit him that he, as the eldest son, had the responsibility of saving his father. Once he was sure, he was swift to act. Pulling Roy to his feet, Junior lifted the old man to his shoulder and retreated toward the horses. He hefted him into the saddle.
Can you ride, Pa?
I can ride. You best get me to Doc Garvey.
Several minutes passed before they realized that Roy and Junior had retreated. When Casey realized they had withdrawn, he ran toward the big pine where he had last seen him.
Buck, they're running for it!
Buck emerged from the rocks on the other side of the clearing.
What was he shooting back down in the trees?
Buster!
Casey sprinted across the clearing after Roy.
He's tied to a tree back there!
I'll pick him up!
Buck ran immediately toward the group of trees Casey had just vacated. With no time to argue the point, Casey plunged ahead, fighting vines and low-growing brush in an effort to catch up to the Blantons before they could get to their horses. But he was too late. It had taken Buck a few minutes to find Buster tied to a tree in a small thicket of pines.
Well, Buster, what a fine mess you got yourself into. Why the hell didn't you keep running like I told you to?
Get me loose and hurry up!
Hell, boy, I can't do that. Shouldn't have got yourself caught.
Damn it! You've been paid to do it!
I reckon that was the biggest mistake I ever made. Well, I reckon there ain't nothing I can do about that now. So I'm gonna set you free.
Well, hurry up, damn it!
Buster's scowl was followed by a look of shocked surprise when Buck drew his pistol. He put a bullet into Buster's brain.
You're free. Say howdy to old Satan. Tell him I'll be alone directly.
Buster slumped to the ground, his body sagging to one side, held by his hands bound to the tree. Buck watched him for a moment to make sure he was dead.
I'm in too deep to take a chance.
After taking a quick look around him to make sure Casey wasn't approaching, he hurried to untie Buster's belt and dragged him a few feet away from the tree. Then he picked up the dead man's revolver and laid it on the ground beside his hand.
Where are you, Buck?
I'm back here!
Buck waited until Casey found him.
What the hell?
Looks like he got that belt undone somehow. He jumped me when I came through that thicket there. I didn't have no time to think about it. There wasn't no choice. What about Junior and Roy?
They got away. Damn it!
Casey reached down and picked up Buster's pistol, opened the cylinder, and spun it.
Empty. You'd have thought he might have remembered his gun was empty.
He turned and smiled at Buck.
I guess Lady Luck was shining on you today.
Well, you know Buster wasn't ever very bright.
Yeah, I reckon not. I guess we best get on their trail. We're not showing much in the way of taking anybody in for trial, are we?
That was as much as he said on the matter, but it registered in his thoughts that it was strange that Buck had managed to hit Buster in the back of his head after he'd been jumped.
No, but we are getting the job done to stopping the Blanton gang. Three down and two to go. And you think you wounded old Roy?
I only got one shot. Hit him in the arm. Couldn't have been very serious. I'll get the horses.
We're gonna have to do something with these bodies. And we need to round up their horses.
To hell with the bodies. We can catch their horses, but hell, let the buzzards take care of the bodies. We sure as hell can't take them back to McAllister. And we've got the old man and his son on the run. The old man is wounded. They're gonna be trying to get someplace to take care of him.
We'll track them, but we need to at least put these two in the ground. According to regulations, that's what we're supposed to do, according to the book.
When did you start going by the book?
Casey turned and began walking toward the other side of the clearing.
I'll get the horses. We can dump the bodies between those rocks over there and pile some more on top of them. We're wasting time.
Working as quick as he could, Casey caught the two outlaws' horses while Buck disposed of the bodies, stripped of their weapons and anything else of value, into the rocks at the side of the clearing. Casey loaded the personal items on their horses, wishing he and Buck didn't have to be burdened with them, but knowing they couldn't leave them to wander. By the time they were ready to ride, they had lost almost an hour. Clear of the notch between the two hills, they stopped to examine the trail that had led them from McAllister the day before.
This don't make no sense.
Buck looked closely at the fresh track.
They're headed back toward McAllister.
Yeah, looks like that's the way they're headed.
Both satisfied in the direction of the Blantons, they started back to McAllister. The tracks were fresh, and there had been no attempt to hide them as the two outlaws galloped west. Making good time, Casey and Buck were able to push the horses hard for a few miles, then changed over to the captured horses to give theirs a rest. They hoped to make up some distance this way. Coming to a wide creek, they splashed across to discover no tracks on the other side. Both riders pulled up short.
They've been running flat out up to here. But old Roy must have took over right here, because now they're thinking about hiding their trail. I knew all the time they weren't headed back to McAllister.
I'll go this way, you go that way.
Casey started walking the horses along the creek bank, looking for the place where Roy and Junior came out of the water. After scouting the west bank for almost a half mile with no sign, Casey crossed back over to the east side and searched along that bank until returning to the spot from which he had started. He glanced up to see Buck returning on the same side of the creek.
Nothing.
Me neither. I followed the creek till I got to a little waterfall. They would have had to come out of the water to get around it.
Damn it. It had to come out somewhere. Sure as hell didn't ride the creek the whole way. Roy's pretty damn slick, but he can't fly.
A thought struck Casey then. He dismounted to examine the trail they had followed until reaching the creek.
They rode into the creek and turned around and came out the same way they rode in.
He pointed out tracks going the opposite way.
We were riding so fast we didn't even notice the tracks coming out of the creek. And they were smart enough to go into the water to turn around, so we wouldn't likely notice.
Well, it worked, didn't it? Roy Bland is a pretty sly old fox. That's the reason he ain't been caught all these years.
They turned around and started backtracking, moving at a more careful pace, watching for the point where the Blantons left the trail. In about a quarter of a mile, where the trail led through a series of small hills covered with pines and oaks, the reversed tracks ended. Casey looked up at the thick, forested hillsides.
They picked a good place to leave the trail.
It took a little time, but Casey finally found a hoof print pointing up the slope on the south side of the trail. Farther up, he found another and a footprint, telling him that one or both of the men had led the horses up the hill. By now, it was getting along in the afternoon, and they had already spent considerable time trying to track the two fugitives. Casey had a nagging feeling that they were rapidly losing ground. There was no answer to the problem, other than pushing as hard as they could and hoping the outlaws would have to stop soon to tend to Roy's wounds or rest the horses. The trail was picked up again south of the hills and seemed to be headed toward a small range of mountains the local folk called the Jack Ford Mountains.
It's half a day's ride from here to Jack Forks. We ain't got half a day's daylight left. We got maybe 2 or 3 hours before we best take the first water hole we can find and make camp. We got a lot of stock to take care of.
Casey couldn't argue the point, so they stayed with it until coming to a small stream just before dark. The next morning, they continued on, following a trail that led them up into the mountains and down the other side. After another day, the trail ended again at the banks of the Kiamishi River.
We can cross over tonight or cross over in the morning. Whatever suits you best. Don't make no difference to me. I got a feeling we ain't gonna find no tracks on the other bank anyway.
Although he didn't express it, Casey was of the same opinion. The slow-moving river was the next logical place for Roy to try to disguise his trail again. Casey looked around him, then gazed at the other side, already dim in the evening light.
This looks about as good as any. If we wait till morning, we'll be able to see better.
Suits the hell out of me. I ain't thinking about much but a cup of hot coffee right now.
Without waiting for more discussion on the subject, Buck dismounted and led his horse and the pack horse over to a small glade near the water's edge.
Yeah.
Casey followed, leading the saddled horses. Buck started to rummage through the packs.
We're running low on supplies. There ain't more than a couple handfuls of coffee beans left, and we're gonna have to hunt something to eat when this bacon is gone. That ain't gonna be long. If I can kill something to take the place of bacon, there ain't nothing that'll take the place of coffee.
Casey listened to Buck talk while he tended to the horses, and Buck went about building a fire. He figured that was one thing that made him a good partnership. Buck liked to talk, and he didn't.
We ain't gonna find no tracks on the other side of the river in the morning, because it looks like Roy's hightailing it back to Texas. Our job is gonna be to find where he came out of the water downstream.
Casey shrugged without comment. It made sense. Just as they expected, the following morning there were no exit tracks on the other side of the river. Once again, the search was begun, scouting the riverbanks on both sides, this time to no avail. There was no sign that the two fugitives ever came out of the river. They rode down the river until it made no sense to go farther. Although it didn't figure to go along with a desperate run for Texas, they had no other option but to scout the banks upstream from the point where the tracks ended. The result at the end of the day was the same. Roy and his son had disappeared, gone up in smoke, as if they had suddenly taken wing. It was irritating to the point of frustration for Casey.
Sometimes a fox gets a rabbit, sometimes a rabbit gets away.
Yeah, we'll just have to try it again tomorrow. We missed it somewhere. There were several places where if a man was real careful, he might be able to lead his horse out of the river and not leave any tracks. We've just got to look closer.
Yeah, we'll look closer tomorrow.
As if verifying their failure to apprehend the two remaining members of the Blanton gang, they were awakened the next morning by a light rain. When the rain hadn't stopped by noon, they feared that any tracks there had been might be washed away. It was not until twilight that Casey agreed to give up the search, admitting that they'd been beaten. He was not comfortable with the idea, even though Buck tried to put it in the perspective that nobody came out on top every time.
There ain't no doubt in my mind that Roy Blanton is headed back to Texas just as fast as he can run. We didn't catch him. We damn sure hurt him bad and ran him out of our territory. That's as good as an arrest.
The hell it is.
There was really nothing more they could do at this point, so they figured they might as well go on back to Fort Smith and report what he considered to be their failure. But he knew that as far as he was concerned, this job was not finished.